Listen again on the hour for NBC Monitor News. Hello, everybody. This is Monitor, and this is Frank Sinatra, Jr., and I am your host for this evening's show. We'll be right back after the overture, which is the in crowd, Ramsey Lewis and the trio. And once again, a good evening, everybody. This is Frank Sinatra, Jr. Welcome coast to coast, everybody who's on the monitor line. We're here in New York and delighted to have you back with us again. It's always nice to be held over, incidentally. And while I'm here playing the Rainbow Grill in Rockefeller Center, an old buddy of mine is playing, just a little bit uptown at the Copacabana. And he's going to drop by to see us in a couple of minutes or so. I'm talking about an extraordinary fella, Mr. George Kirby. So we're going to bring on the kid from Chicago in just a moment, but right now, how about a tune by Chicago? Here is Beginnings.
When I'm with you, it doesn't matter where we are or what we're doing. I'm with you, that's I could sing it to you.
My first guest tonight is a man who I haven't seen in quite some time now. And like all my friends in this business, he has progressed and made himself even more popular than in the past when I first met him some 8 years ago. And that's because he's a very, very talented man. As a matter of fact, he's a whole lot of very, very talented men. Mr. George Kirby is here. And George, welcome to Monitor, and welcome to old Junior's second week in the radio line.
How do you like it?
Huh? Well, I like it very, very much. I like it because I can get to visit with my old friends. I've seen people in the past week that I haven't seen in 10 years.
Right.
George, you've opened up at the Copa now, is that right?
Yeah.
And according to some notes that I made investigating what you've been doing lately, it has been something like 5 years since you appeared in a nightclub in New York City?
Yeah, but don't say investigation to an old performer like me.
Well, let's just say that I was curious to know what you'd been up to.
Right,
because you travel so much. And I want to tell you, anybody that comes into this studio wearing a coat like you wore a few minutes ago deserves to be investigated.
You know, the only place I can wear it is in the city. I dare not go in the country with it, because first of all, before they shoot, they say, how did the polar bear get here?
But I'm glad to know that you found time to come over and visit me today, incidentally. And there's a few things I wanted to ask about. Is it true that in your repertoire you can impersonate some 200 different people?
No, it's about 150.
Oh, I'd give myself a little leeway then.
Yeah,
that's 150.
About 150.
I see.
They're not all notable voices, you know, but you call them a character voice, or you call them a voice of mine, because you do an airplane pilot, you do a female...
Yes. You mean a general personality.
Yeah,
can you do General George S. Patton at all?
Well, I'd be glad to lead your men into battle.
Everybody, that's the latest impression for all the impressionists.
Oh, yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me, George, if you want to impersonate somebody, a new performer that you
well,
saw, how
first
do you go
of all,
about?
First of all, you got to pick out a good character voice before you even go to research on them. You get a good voice that's going to be known, that's going to stand out. If it's a well-known voice, then you want to be around that person when they relax, when they're not working, when they're not performing, because invariably you'll find anyone who's performing, they eject more, they emote more when they're before a camera,
right,
the lights on them, you know, they're acting. So if you get their voice while they're doing that, then it sounds exaggerated when you do it.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
It's like a Walter Brennan. Now, Walter Brennan, when he's relaxed, is more or less talking to him like that, and he's not too excited about the whole thing, you know. He's just talking natural, and we're just sitting around talking about the whole thing. But when he starts emoting, he gets way up there high like that, and he starts talking, and he gets right into it.
How about your impersonation of the late Nathaniel, George? You know, I was surprised to learn how much you had toured with Nat Cole in the 50s, long before he was ever taken ill, before his death.
Oh, yeah, we...
Well, I tell you, I think you're a very lucky fellow. I think you're a very lucky fellow. I met Mr. Cole a couple of times in my life.
Mm.
And needless to say, other than Frank Sinatra, Nat Cole was the only man who ever had Nelson Riddle really write for him.
Yeah.
And those records that they turned out in the 1950s, they streamed off the presses in their hundreds of thousands. Did you know that the late Nathaniel had 37 consecutive hit records?
Right.
Consecutive hits. Not what one was, bad one in 37.
What was such a gas about going to see Nat in person was the fact that very rarely did he introduce a new song during his personal appearance. He sang one hit after another.
Right. Yeah, and everybody clapping their hands red.
He used to... we'd stand in the wings. Sarah Vaughan and I would stand in the wings listening to him, you know. And he started with a thing called I'm Never Satisfied. This is when we're doing the tours together.
Mm-hmm.
And when he gets to the end of it, he said... I'm never satisfied until you hold me in your arms, just and hold me tight and hold me tight, tight, tight. Da 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 da. He said, "Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Now we like to soften down, do a little tune. It goes funny, and he right on. He
right,
had the perfect ear. Perfect.
Just start without any arpeggio.
Without any arpeggio.
Right, jump right in.
Funny, and go right into it.
Well, that's the way. That's why he was the king. George, we're going to break away for one moment here. We want to say that this is Frank Sinatra Jr. here at Monitor, and I'm speaking with my old pal, George Kirby. And right now, for our NBC stations from coast to coast, you're on the Monitor Beacon.
Thank you.
George, we're back now. This is Monitor. And this is Frank Sinatra Jr. And my guest right now is George Kirby, who I am delighted to talk to because tonight I've learned something brand new about George, and that is that he was on staff with Nat Cole and Nat's wonderful tours, both foreign and domestic. And, you know, George, I would love to just have you tell me about Mr. Cole, because later in this evening, I've scheduled some of his records, which I always do every time I'm on the radio, because I believe that Nat Cole was one of the truest singers that ever lived.
He was. Well, Nat and I came up together. He's a little older now. As we came up together in Chicago before it burned down. And Nat was always a person that loved that piano. He played the heck out of it. A lot of people didn't realize what a great pianist
he
was.
No, that's right. That's true. In my lifetime, people had problems with that. When I was a little kid, there was a place on Sunset Strip in Los Angeles called The Players, which is long since defunct.
Yeah.
And my father used to take me when I was in my knee pants, and we would go in there, and all the musicians would come over from other places at night, and Nat was there with the trio. Now, this is before he was really singing. He would sing a little bit, and he'd sit at the piano, and they'd say, "Hey, psst, Nat, get up there and sing. Get up the microphone and sing." And he'd say, "Oh, I want to play," and he'd sit at the piano, and all the musicians would be in the back of the room having their drinks, and we'd be sitting at a front table. Finally, they would talk him into it, and he would get up, and very nervously, he'd fix his tie and straighten his jacket, and he'd walk to the microphone, and word would start in the back of the room, "Psst, he's standing up, he's standing up, he's standing up, he's going to sing, he's standing up." But that really, they literally had to bribe him to get him up from the piano originally, because he didn't want to sing in the beginning.
First thing I think he made was straighten up and fly right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
"Buzzard took a monkey for a ride in the air."
Yeah. To me, this is personal now. To me, what made Nat and Frank so great among singers was the fact that you understood every single word.
Certainly.
You didn't have to say, what was that
no,
line?
No, the late Nathaniel, at record dates, I would see him stop and he would say, "Either we should rewrite this lyric or we are going to break the tempo here and perhaps slow down a little bit." Nat recorded a song years ago at Capitol Records, which was called "Someone You Love." Simple melodies become enchanted symphonies when you're with someone you love. Remember, this was a big hit. This is one of his Magic 37. And at one point, there were two lyrics that were run together very closely, and he stopped and he said, "Nels," he says, "we're going to have to break a little stride here." So every time they would get to the title of the song, "When You're With Da-ba-ba-ba, Someone You Love," Nelson wrote a little figure for the orchestra that came in each time. And suddenly the song had a whole new personality.
Yeah.
And it was a hit like that. Overnight it came out, and like all his other records, this is the magic that Nat had. That's interpretation.
Yeah.
Speaking of interpretation, George, tell me something. You are famous for doing dialects.
Mm.
I would like to hear you give me just a few dialects, if you could do that for me. I'd really dig knowing how,
You see, I'll never forget the first time I met the old woman, you know. I was sitting in the London Casino Theatre. Mind me own business, all of a sudden I felt the hand touch me leg. I looked over, there was a fella groping around the dock. I said, "What's up, mate?" He said, "I dropped me apple on the floor." I said, "You won't be able to eat now, it's all dirty."
And this is my friend, Mr. Hardy. All right, we've got the Cockney going. And the Irish?
Well, now, it won't be long before I'll be sending my son to school, you see. Because he's a bright lad, that he is.
I wish I could do that. I wish I could do those all the dialects and whatnot.
Well, it's just a matter of knowing how to approach the dialect. And I tell a story, you know what I mean? I tell a story, and if I don't tell the story in the true dialect, I let the story alone. I just tell it in my own voice.
Well, will you just do one thing for me? After that voice, don't kiss me on the cheek. Huh? There it is right there. I thought for a minute the Godfather had arrived.
Well, I tell you, this here story, I would like to tell the whole thing, but I won't be able to. See, it's about Romeo and Juliet. Well, now Romeo and Juliet, they were really in love with one another, see?
Right, right.
But now, that them families back there, they were feuding. They think it was feuding in the mountains? Oh, no. They really did feud back there, but that there Romeo, he was something else. I'll never forget, he went down there by her balcony, he stood there in the bushes, and he said, "Hark, What light through that there window shine up there?
And she said, splendid, Jonathan Winters. What other impersonations do you do, huh? George, tell me one thing. Now that we have discussed all the things you do on stage, what's George Kirby like in his own private life? What do you do off stage? I hear you tote the clubs a little bit. I hear you're a golfer. Is that right?
Yeah, I love to golf, and I dabble in TV. I have a portable set with a special effects board, and I try to put together commercials.
Well, George,
and,
I got to tell
paint.
You, that's a marvelous... You paint?
Yeah.
Oh, you do paint?
Yeah.
You know,
I'd like to have
anybody
photograph.
That could do that.
I'd like to have a photograph of you so I could do a
You want
to
paint me?
A portrait shot of you.
Oh,
I did your father.
You're putting me on.
No kidding, I would.
You want to paint me?
Certainly.
Gee, I can't believe it. This is my second week in radio, and already I'm being immortalized by Norman Rockwell here. I can't get it. George, of all your impressions, what's your favorite?
Well, I don't know if everybody out there would remember his voice, although he's done some guest shots on TV and everything. You know, he's a host out at Caesar's Palace. He's the former heavyweight champ of the world.
You're not talking about Joe Louis.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about, Joe Louis. And that's my favorite voice. When I'm working out there, you know, invariably somebody will say, hey, do Joe. You know? So I got a bit out of him, you know, I say, the winner and still heavyweight champ of the world, Joe Louis. Just a moment, trying to get Joe to say a few words. Joe, let's wait to the mic. Joe, tell me, what do you think was the punch that did it?
Where's a left uppercut to Joe?
Well, Joe, did he have you nervous any time in that fight?
Well, around the first of five counts, probably a bit, but everything all right.
Well, Joe, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Well, I just want to thank my manager, Mr. Roxburgh, and to tell my mom. And just when I get to that point, the curtain opens up and he comes through. He says, I done told you, I don't talk like that.
Well, George, I want to thank you for doing your impersonation of one of the greats, the Brown Bomber, of course. What a wonderful man he is, too. And I want to thank you for coming over to be with us tonight, because I think you're a wonderful man for finding time from your schedule over at the Copa Caboo to come over here and be on the radio with old Junior here. And don't forget, everybody in the New York area, George Kirby will be over at the Copa Cabana through December the 20th. Speaking of nightclubs, folks, a little later on this evening, which is our current policy, I'm going to have to excuse myself from the studio and go upstairs and go to work at the Rainbow Grill, and I'm inviting Monitor and all of you listening to come up with us. My guest has been Mr. George Kirby, my old pal. And George, thank you very, very much for coming over to
Pleasure.
Be with old Francis here.
Pleasure. Good deal.
Well, George, while we've been speaking about Nathaniel, a wonderful Nat Cole is a great singer, how about we listen a little bit to some of his wonderful piano stylings here? This is the piano side of Nat Cole. And this has been a very, very pleasant half hour for me, ladies and gentlemen, and I hope that you'll stick around and come back with us. That sound. Nat Cole, who played exactly the way he sang, never wasting a note. There's much more to come, ladies and gentlemen, right here on Saturday Night Monitor, so stick around. We're going to be back very, very shortly. This is Frank Sinatra, Jr.